Joe presents TKO, together with 32 Red.
Welcome to round 11 of TKO here on Joe, together with 32 Red. Fight fans are often debating top British fighters to have never won a world title. If we were to make a quick top five, who would be in it for you?
Well, there's a few. Harl Bomber Graham.
Yeah. Like Michael Watson, maybe?
Michael Watson. Kirkland Lang.
Yeah. Kevin Mitchell, too.
Kevin Mitchell. Henry Cooper. And the man we're going to speak to today, I think, probably should have won two world titles.
I think you're probably right. And that man, of course, is Martin Murray. We're up here in Warrington for round 11. We're going to head to Murray's Tavern and go and have a chat with him. Should we head over?
Let's do it.
Let's do it.
You are, in many people's views, unlucky to have not won two, potentially three world titles. Is that a compliment, as far as you're concerned?
I don't know. I mean, it's just one of them things, isn't it? You know, some people have a little bit of luck, others don't. But, I mean, if I can get recognised by boxing fans as being someone like that, then obviously it's good enough for me, do you know what I mean? I don't look for any praise or acknowledgements. I just do what I do. But if they acknowledge that, and that's what they say, then obviously it's it feels good to me.
You guys have spent a fair bit of time together the last couple of years in camp. You announced your kind of retirement in December. Was that a little bit
as long as he's, I think.
I was going to say, yeah. Yeah. Was that a little bit rash then?
It was immediately after the fight, so obviously the feelings are, you know, very, very raw. And the day after, I said that I'm going to contemplate, have a think about it. And, you know what, if I fight again, I fight again. Great. If I don't, great. That's where I am at the minute. But I think I will definitely fight again. You know, I've had a lot of time just relax and just, you know, think things over. And I'm just going to do it now out of pure enjoyment. You know, going back to what you just said about being unlucky and things like that. I've never had the luck in the boxing, but moving forward now for me, that's what I'm thinking of. You know, the luck's not with me. Just enjoy, and that's what I'm going to do. So, like I said, whether I fight in a few months, great. If I don't, great. You know, I'm in a great period in my life where, you know, I've put a lot of work in the boxing. You know, I've worked hard, but it's just time now to start enjoying it and just relaxing a bit.
I remember that interview in the change room, because I was in the same change rooms the night I lost the Warrington, and you lost it in Dam, and I remember thinking, don't be saying that, Martin. Just because it was like rush, you know, the fight had just happened. It's like, give it at least a few days, think about it. And that's why after the Warrington fight with me, I never said on camera over the car, but in my head it was.
Yeah.
But then, if you don't announce it, you can come back and no one says a thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I'm like, I knew just by the day after by saying that I was retired, that it was a bit too soon. And that's why I said I've not made an official statement, but could call myself semi-retired. Like I said, if I fight again, great. If I don't, great. Do you know what I mean? But I'm not physically done. I was more the year he had last year. Like, we had a top 10 away, didn't we, the camps?
Yeah.
Honestly, them training camps were absolutely quality, first class. And it was the first time really where throughout my career I'd really enjoyed being in a training camp, and I absolutely loved it. But you know, looking back, you know, I grafted hard last year, and it didn't work out for me. Obviously, I had the two pullouts, and then had that Garcia fight, and then again worked second half of the year, grafted, and it didn't work out for me against Ndam, and I was just low. Do you know what I mean? Because they say like you want to get out what you put in, and I don't think in some cases that's not the case. You know what I mean? I've like committed and dedicated my life since I turned pro properly to boxing. Obviously, coming from the past I come from and the life that I had. And I've done really well. Nobody thought that I'd get here. But I was just flat, mentally flat. You know, physically I wasn't, but mentally I was just done with it. I was just done with it. And, you know, even like we fought on that Saturday, what was it, the 22nd?
22nd,
yeah. But my wife and my kids went away on the 20th. So I had to fly straight after the fight. I had to fly over to Vietnam. I met her on a cruise in Vietnam, but I got there Christmas Eve and I didn't see them till Christmas Day. And I just thought, you know, I'd done all that, sacrificed all that, and it just didn't, you know, it didn't work out for me. And it's just one of them. Like I said, I was just flat, but I had a few months off now and I feel good. And I feel that if a fight come up, I'd really, really think about taking it.
Kids are the best in them situations, I think, because especially just before Christmas, both of us lost. We could have been down in the dumps, but you can't because you've got your kids looking forward to Christmas. Mm, so you kind of just have to wise up, and there's more important things than boxing, really.
Yeah, it's very true. 25 years you've been at it as an amateur and a pro. Yeah. 10 as a pro, 15 as an amateur, though they were kind of stop-start years. Talk to me about where it all started for you, so where you grew up.
I grew up in a roughly sherry in St Helens, you know, proper council estate area. Work really as for me growing up was non-existent. There was no jobs in the town, really. Well, there was, but not from the estate I grew up in. We wasn't brought up to be like that. I first went to the gym at 7, and there's a fellow on the wall there, Johnny Chisnall, my old first boxing coach. And what he used to do, he used to come round, and you won't get away with it now. He just used to come round and throw loads of kids in his van on Middle Estate, you know what I mean? Like I said, you won't get away with it now.
Take him to the gym?
Yeah, that's what he used to do. So he used to go...
What are you thinking?
Just checking.
Well, that's what he used to do, and he used to come, and he just like... But he was well-known, very well-respected man in the area. And he was just... All he wanted to do was... Mate, he was a pro, didn't do well. For his mistakes, he just wanted to make kids achieve the golden dreams. And he was just committed to doing that. So obviously he got me in the gym going, and you know, I first went at 7, and then I had a few breaks and then started properly at 10. But I was small, mate. I was like I was a little runt as a kid, you know. I was 16 and last year of school, and I won the school boys at 7 stone. Do you know what I mean? So like Craig Lyon was in the weight above me. Have you seen how small
Craig is? I sparred Craig.
So Craig Lyon, like one of my long time old friends, he was in the weight above me. So I was tiny as a kid. But then even though I boxed, I wanted to box in the army. So I was just committed just to going in the army. My grades at school, just focused on getting what I needed to get in the army. But then I failed the medical when I went for my induction type thing. And then I just remember being at Lime Street Station, coming back from Sutton Coldfield, and I was 17, and my dreams were just like shattered. So then, the week later, I went to a nightclub called Wigan Pier, and I've got no shame in saying it, but I took a tablet, an ecstasy tablet, and my life from then just completely went all over the show. So I had about 2 years out, and then come back, but what I did in them 2 years ended up getting me jail.
What did you do in those 2 years?
I got done for street robbery, so I was literally that off my head, you know, the GHB, it's like the date rape drug, and that's why I drank a bottle of that. So
it's good that Carl's laughing about it.
No, but I just used going like mad benders, and I'd been up all weekend, and then my mates come back from this party in Bolton, and they had all this GHB, and I drank a bottle of this GHB, and the next 12-24 hours were just a complete blur for me. And what I did in this 24-hour blur, I was just all over the show, and I street robbed somebody. I had no reason to do it. I was just that off me head. I didn't know what I was doing. So I got 3 years for that.
Wow.
Yeah, so then obviously what I did then, I did that and got out, and then when I got out, I won the ABAs. But what I'd done then, I'd had a mad fight in a chipper over, it wasn't me, my mate's a vegetarian. Yeah. Mate's a vegetarian, and every time we used to go out, he only used to get chips or cheesy chips, yeah, because he's a vegetarian.
What a waste of a life.
I'm a random and all. So anyway, we've gone in this chipper, and they've not cut the chips proper. So they give him frozen chips, so we bit into it. And he was bladding my mate, and he couldn't fight save his life. I was always there backing him up, Mike, but he was always kicking off. Because I was young then, I just used to back him up. And he'd had a bottle of WKD, yeah, and he threw it behind Conza because he gave him frozen chips, and it landed in the fryer. Yeah, and the chip, he just ended up going up on fire, like never caught fire, but big smoke, and then all the drivers come out, and we just ended up, I was trying to sort this out, this obviously disagreement we was all having, and then it just escalated, so we ended up being in a big brawl. So then anyway, we got nicked, but I give my brother's name in, because they didn't really know me, the police, I had no tattoos then. So anyway, I managed to get out as I was Danny, but then the police got onto me, so I was on the run then. But when I was on the run, I started to box. I won the ABAs.
You boxed in the ABAs, didn't
yeah,
you?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, so I weighed in ABAs 2004. And just managed to skirt around
it. Did you feel on the edge when you were there?
Every show I went, every show I went, I thought police were going to be there and nick me.
Wow.
But look, you know, everything happens for a reason, don't it? And luckily, I managed to get through it.
There's enough pressure boxing in the ABAs without wondering, without having to look out for the old nick.
Yeah, yeah, in between rounds.
Yeah. So.
I remember reading that in your book, actually, yeah, about your mate, the vegetarian lad, yeah, just like... out doing what you do at the weekend, bit of a header obviously, but he's a vegetarian and just
it just doesn't make any sense at all, does it?
Yeah, that's what it was over. So like, yeah, what I was getting onto then was I'd won ABAs and then I fought for England and I got on the funding and I got on the Commonwealth squad type thing.
Well, because that was the time Amir Khan had won, the same year you won the ABAs, right, yeah, the same year Amir Khan won the silver, and that's when we got a big injection of funding for the British.
That's right, so when I think it was Amir Khan, Neil Perkins, yeah, me and John Watson went on his training camp. He went over Cyprus, he went on an acclimatiser. You know, you know, to get used to all the weather, because it was in Greece, wasn't it, 2004. So we went over there. But like I said, with all this, I was on my toes, just managed. But luckily then when I went, 3 years before that, I got jailed in Cyprus when I was 18. So I got jailed in Cyprus when I was 18 and...
This is mad. Yeah. You should all buy his book, by the way.
It's a great advert for it, yeah. The hardback is now available.
But then, I got a three-year ban when I got released, and luckily, my three-year ban had just come up by the time I went on this England camp. But then, back in the 2004, the police were on me then. So even though I won the ABAs and sorted my life out, I then got nicked and I cut my tag off in the meantime as well, because he had a tag round my ankle. It was wild, as it sounds. But then it come back then from that fight in 2003.
Right.
So then I got jail again. And then I got out and then I had a fight with some doorman. And then I got jail again. And then I got really lucky with a sentence. So in 2006, I come out and I was just like, I'd had enough. And I just met my now wife, Gemma. And it was one of them where, if I didn't do it then, I'd be forever doing it. And yeah, I'd have lost Gemma. And it was just the time to do it, do you know what I mean? And it was just one of them where I got out and no matter what, I was turning my life around. And that's what I did. I just got my head down and just started grafting. But went back to what I knew what was best, which was boxing.
Is any of this sound like the man that you know, have known for the last few years?
No, not now, because I've heard all the stories and stuff and, you know, being in camp with Martin, but... It's commendable, like, what you've done, considering where you've came from and reading the book and all them stories to get where you've got. And I always... Martin's just, like, he's a proper man, you know what I mean? I can imagine that he can go and, like, fit his own kitchen and stuff and do anything he needs to. And, you know, a good family man. He's had the past, but he's, like, a completely reformed character now. Yeah. And, yeah, the stories are funny. I always like listening to them, but...
As somebody that's never thrown a WKD in a chip pan...
That wasn't me.
That wasn't you.
Yeah,
what? It was a vegetarian.
Yeah, sorry, it's the vegetarian. Yeah. Just talk to me about prison. So the first time you went in was you did a 3-year stretch.
No, well, I was in Cyprus before that.
Right.
So I got caught with some tablets in Cyprus. So literally, there was four of us who went.
What's a Cyprus clink like?
I was just going to ask. Oh, yeah.
Unreal. Well, I went back in the. I went there last year. I go back every year. Because my family's got a place over there that we go. And I managed to get in last year. I knew some fella in Nicosia who's got a boxing gym. We just got chatting over Instagram and I went to his gym and then he said, what are you coming to Nicosia for? I said, I'm going to try and get in this prison. I was there. I've got questions I just want to ask him, you know, because it was like so long ago. And he was like, oh, well, I might have a few connections for you.
When you say questions, what sort of questions?
I don't know, just like... Just like people who was there, do you know what I mean? Who I'd love find them, love see them.
Some of them had met people that you got.
Yeah,
on
yeah. Some of them I'd never ever see again.
How long did you do in Cyprus?
Oh, got lucky. We got 6 weeks.
Yeah.
But it was like proper jail. Yeah, like it was something you'd see off a film. So like there was 12, six bunk beds, 12 in a cell.
Does time go differently as well when you're in there? 6 weeks feel like longer than 6 weeks.
No, but you know what? I don't want to obviously glorify you, but you was literally let out in the morning. You sunbathed all day and you just got locked up at night. You was going for a roll call at dinner and then let back out and then roll call for tea and then you was in then. So you was out in the sun just playing football.
Did they give you sun cream?
No, they never. Not glorifying it, but it was... it was bad. And what I put my mum through, do you know what I mean? My mum nearly had a nervous breakdown, so I put my mum through a lot of... My mum and dad threw a lot of crap over the years, like...
How often could you ring home?
No, we never... We didn't want to phone. We couldn't phone home.
So, what? I guess that must have been the very first time you found out you were going inside. That must have been quite a scary thought, especially...
Well, I was on the run, so my mate got nicked before me, and I was just out off my head. Off my head. I didn't know where it was, and I'd come back, and the room had been raided. And they'd been nicked, so I was just on my own, and I ended up on the run for a few days. And then I phoned my mum then, like, because I knew I had myself in. There was talk of me going to Egypt, because you can get the boat over to Egypt and flying back from Egypt. But when I'd got a little moped, which I fell off and snapped my collarbone in while I was on the run as well, by the way, so I had a bad time. But then... I didn't know where to put the moped, and I needed the moped to get me scooter, and I just didn't. It was everything was a blur. I was only there 4 or 5 days. I was only there for a week, and like it all just escalated like that. But it was at a time where I was just young. I was daft. I was stupid. I look back now, and I mean, I've never been a nasty person, but I was just stupid. Do you know what I mean? But it got to the stage where, like, for some unknown reason, like. Me growing up as a kid, not young, but like when I got into like me, you know, when I started going out being stupid, I was convinced I was going to be dead before 30. I was just convinced, you know, because what I was doing, the life I was leading, I thought there's no way I can keep going like this. So I was kind of like, I was just wrecking myself. Do you know what I mean? Just like because I was just convinced in my head that that's what was going to happen.
What's the sort of fate been of your group of mates from school or who you were?
Oh, well, there's loads of them, obviously. People who's slurred, people who's died, you know, people who's, you know, been killed, people who's died from drug overdoses, you know, people who's in jail for a long time.
So you're seeing sort of reflections of what your life could have been
Yeah, kind of, yeah. But, like, going back to, like, Johnny Chiz, when he used to always say to me, like, about people, because I was going out drinking all the time, and he said, like, that, you know, there's a life there for you if you want it. So he said to me, just knuckle down now. He said, these here who's in the pub, because I was obsessed with going to pub all the time, and these who's here now, he said, they'll be here in 10, 20, 30 years' time.
Yeah.
They're going to be here all their life. I mean, you just go out and dedicate now, a few years, focus, 10 years, he said, and your life will change forever. And you're young and you're daft and you don't take the advice on, do you? So it took me a good few years to catch on, But, you know, I'm a firm believer in everything happens for a reason, and everything that happened when it did, you know, I wouldn't be with Gemma, one of my kids, we wouldn't be here now talking like this, you know what I mean? So I just think it's important just to take the positives out of everything, do you know what I mean? When I go into jails now, I want to speak with inmates, and it was like me when I got out in 2006, it was up to me to change. Do you know what I mean? Your chance comes of changing, and this is what I say to him. When that door shuts, when you get out of that jail and that main gate shuts behind you, if you want to change your life for the better, you can. Do you know what I mean? And that's what it was with me. I just had enough of doing all them stupid things, and I just thought, you know, really, I just really want to do something positive in my life.
I guess it's the difficult thing, isn't it? Because in hindsight, it's always easy to look back and say, this is what I should have done as an amateur, or I wish I'd done more road work, or I wish I'd got up earlier and done this. But obviously, the hardest thing when you're a kid is to see the benefit of that in the future, isn't it?
Yeah, of course, you just want to... There's so many people around me as well. Like, I was getting loads of good advice when I was a kid. Never listened to it, really, and I wasn't doing the stuff that Martin was doing, but I was messing about, like, and... you just wish kind of now, like I'd have loved to have been an Olympian, an Irish Olympian, and it never happened. And I think simply because I didn't apply myself properly. Mm. So it's important to, you get the advice, but the not just nod your head and agree with it, but actually take it in. And when you're a kid, sometimes it may take a while for it just to click and sink in.
Mm, it does take a while. Speaking of Olympians, Billy Joe Saunders was kind of number one guy at welterweight, I think, at the time, went to Beijing. You were welterweight up until, because that was what you boxed in the AABAs, wasn't it?
Yeah, 69, yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I was welterweight for them, but obviously when I went away, I just trained all the time and just got big into weights.
Right.
So, obviously, when I come out, I was like 13 and a half stone. So there was no way. I remember, it's in the book actually, first time I met Jamie, because I turned Steve Wood.
Yeah.
He was my manager and he took me ashore and Jamie seen size him and he went, "Oh, you're like, mate, yes, and what weight are you going to do?" I went, "Oh, I just thought I'd just slip back into welter." And I went, "Well, like 13 and a half stone welter." He just burst out laughing. Then, "No, fucking whatever you do, welter, mate."
Yeah, yeah, curious.
But then obviously when I got into training and I realised there was no way I was going to make it.
When did you first meet Oliver Harrison?
I met Oliver that after 2006.
Right.
So I was with John. What happened was in 2005, like, Johnny Chisnall, my trainer, died while I was away. So when I come out of the gym, you know, it just wasn't the same with John, and I couldn't see myself being there without John. So I went to John Lyon's gym then. John Lyon was like, obviously, Craig's that 8-time ABA champion. You know, I think he'd come up with Games Gold. He'd been about the circuit for years. He was an Olympian. And he had a gym in Wigan. So I just went back to him then. And I literally got out. I think I got out the Friday. And then I went to him the Monday. And I just went, "John, listen, mate, I need to do something with my life now. Because if I don't, I'll be forever doing this, going in and out of jail." And he was like, "Listen, just start coming gym with me." John, fair play to him, he's come pick me up every morning. So we used to go into DW now, but it was JJB, and we used to come to gym and do our session and train at night, and he dedicated loads of his time to me. And during that time, I was going all over, so I was trying to find a pro gym. Anyway, I went to his gym and we just, when I met Oliver, I just knew he was the guy for me, like, you know what I mean. And it was one thing I didn't want to do was, because when I decided to turn my life around, I moved out of St. Helens to Wigan to get away from, like, all my old mates out there. I mean, I still see him now, but I needed to get away from him and just change my life. So that was the thing. When I turned pro, I wanted a gym. I could have gone to a gym in Liverpool where I knew loads of old fighters and stuff like that, but, from amateur days. But I thought, you know, I need a clean break as well. So that's why I went Oliver's in Salford.
It's like reinventing yourself, isn't it, a little bit?
Though, yeah, yeah.
From everything.
I had to be honest with you, because, I mean, where I was, the only way was up, which was a good thing.
Yeah.
But I had a lot of rebuilding, a lot of reinventing to do, you know what I mean?
You went through the domestic ranks pretty comfortably. You're sort of unchallenged in 20, 21, 22 fights. And then you had Nick Blackwell for the British.
Yeah.
And then suddenly you're ranked, I think, WBA number 3, and Felix Sturm gets floated. When was the first time you got the phone call about that?
Well, it was just after the Macklin fight, when Sturm fought Macklin. And obviously Macklin, you know, I thought he should have won that fight. It was a close fight.
Close, didn't he?
Yeah, yeah. So I think from their perspective, they wanted to get an I-ranked, somebody who was similar in the UK, just kind of bury that decision with Macklin type thing, you know.
Because he did
a
lot of soft touches before that, hadn't he, really?
Oh, yeah.
Sturm, he did a lot of pretty soft defence.
A lot of Germans, Germans do, they get built up and they fight for a while.
But I think I'd fought Blackwell and then fought British title, and then I went straight into a world title then. So, mate, you could say...
the next fight, Blackwell and then Sturm.
So it was a big jump, but obviously it's a, you know, it was a opportunity, wasn't it? You can't knock them type of opportunities down. I mean, the money was shit, but it was a chance for me, to really announce myself on the world stage.
Because Sturm, of course, he was robbed himself when he went over to fight De La Hoya.
Yeah, yeah.
And of course, that if he'd won that fight, it would have poured water on the Hopkins fight, and so it wouldn't have worked. So you kind of get an idea of what's going on at that stage, and you can't blame him therefore for once he secured a world title for
keeping
kind of
it there.
Holding it there, because he'd been a victim of it himself. But never easy when you're obviously on the wrong end of a decision. I mean, you've watched that fight. What do you think? Do you think Mark?
Yeah, I think he won the fight. Yeah. I think anyone else watching will tell you the same.
Yeah.
And that's the thing, you talk about. Talk about fighters, great British fighters who have never been world champions, but with the right decision, Martin would have been twice, at least. So it's very, very unfortunate that you can't call yourself a world champion.
Yeah, it is. But it was one of them with Stern, we knew. Same with Martinez.
You know what's happening when you're going over. It needs to be so wide.
Yeah, you know.
Yeah. You had an opportunity to fight Chavez Jr. after that, in between that and the Martinez fight, wasn't it?
Yeah.
But, of course, visa issues with your past were problematic in getting into America. At what point did you realise that you weren't going to be able to go, and how disappointing was that?
Well, we sent... No, this was because they had Peter Quillen on undercard, chief support undercard of, you know, for WBO undercard of Mayweather Alvarez. We had that fight. But then this was obviously after the Chavez fight. But when what I did was I went and applied for my visa, and I went down to London, and they just point blank refused me. And then the Quillen fight come up then. So then the fella from Golden Boy wanted my criminal record, and I sent in the criminal record, and he just went, not a cat in hell's chance.
Too many chippies.
So that was that gone. So I've always like. So
was Jacobs floated about it as well? Was there a chance of a Jacobs fight?
Well, I fought Jacobs in
amateurs. Twice in the amateurs, didn't you?
Yeah.
You thought about as a pro as well?
No, well, I was kind of open because he just signed with Matchroom, and I was with Matchroom at the time that possibly it will get mentioned. But obviously the Saunders fight come up in the meantime, and I had switched Matchroom to Warren, so it just didn't materialise. But like I said, America's always been like a bit of a closed book for me. There's some great fights over there for me. There was, but just obviously, you know, that's what happens when you're a bellin, when you're a kid, when you're a young lad.
We'll come on to Martinez in just a moment. You boxed Danny Jacobs twice, either side of a week, didn't you?
Yeah. So I fought him on the Monday in London, and then I fought him on the Friday in Liverpool.
Was that telephased?
Yeah, it was the one.
What was he doing over here?
He just England versus America. USA. It was like a big thing on Khan, because Khan fought for it.
Oh, he's on one of those?
Yeah,
ones.
Yeah.
Right, okay.
So what happened was Neil Perkins, me and Perkins were 1-2 at welter, and Perko was meant fighting in London, and then I was meant fighting in Liverpool, but Perko did his hand, and he said, do you want to fight me in London? So I went... Yeah, so I went down London and got beat 19-17. It was a close fight. But then on train on way home, me and Chizzy had an argument. We used to argue all the time. And I didn't go to the gym then all week. So did little bits and bobs of training, but I was at Sharp. I was doing bits of run, trying to keep my weight down. Anyway, managed. He phoned me the night before. Dead unprofessional, really, when you think of it. But just old school. It's how it was then. And... He said, are you fighting Sauna? Yeah, I'll fight. So I went, struggled, was in Sauna a bit, tried, made me weight, couldn't make it, wasn't sharp. Got in there, and Jacobs was just took it up a notch and just pinged me all over, sure. But I remember going out to round three, like thinking, you know, there's nothing I can do. I'm well behind on points now. I just went out, just throwing just big air makers, and I caught him, dropped him. And I thought, I've got it. And then he just got up and just started rubbing, like dusting his gloves off and shaking his head. And then he just got on his bike then. I think I got beat somewhere like 23-11 or something like that. Do you know what I mean? So there was a big difference. But I wasn't at my best that second fight. But it was one of them. That was just when I was just like really could have kicked on from there.
Yeah.
Had my past not brought up, got brought up, you know what I mean? Because, like I said, got fighting for England, got on the funding. And life was, it was good, just went ABAs and that, but like I said, that happened.
And little would you both know, you both go on to have pretty valiant efforts, both against Golovkin, kind of in his prime years.
Yeah, yeah.
And he's now 3 weeks away from a big fight against Canelo Alvarez as well. Carl, any chance you give Danny in that? He boxed very well against Golovkin, didn't he?
Yeah, he did. I think it's a hard fight. We were just talking about it before you guys arrived here, and fair play to Canelo for taking it. I think that with this big deal with DAZN, it was probably a plan laid out, and they said, look, you're getting serious money, so it needs to be serious fights, and Danny Jacobs is definitely a serious fight.
Yeah.
It's not an easy fight for Canelo.
He struggled a bit with southpaws in the past, and Golovkin switch hit. Danny switched it very well against
Golovkin. He worked well for him that against Golovkin, didn't he?
It did. What do you think? Any chance? Would you give that?
Oh, definitely give him a chance. Yeah, definitely. Yeah, he's a top fighter, Jacobs. Mm. I mean, obviously, I thought Canelo and Golovkin. I thought Golovkin won the first one. Mm. A bit unlucky, but I thought Canelo won the second. Yeah. Close fight, but we watched it, no commentary, and we both scored it, and we both had it, give it Canelo by two. So I thought I've been in with Golovkin, so I know how much of an hard fight that is, do you know what I mean? And to do what I thought in the second fight, he did what he needed to do, all centre of the ring and pushing him back. But Jacobs, I thought Golovkin won. He pushed him close, but I thought Golovkin.
The knockdown probably just tipped it over.
Yeah. But so, I struggled to him when he went southpaw. But Jacobs is a live opponent for anybody. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Really rate him. He's a good fighter. And Canelo's got his hands full when they fight.
So four prison stretches or 11 rounds with Golovkin. Which is worse?
Oh, get me back in with Golovkin any day. Really? Oh, without a shadow of a doubt, yeah.
Crikey. Yeah. Never get me in the can then. before we come on to your fight with Golovkin, you went to Argentina for Martinez. I mean, given the visa issues, Carl, that could have been quite a good excuse for fighters to have avoided Martin stateside, just knowing that he couldn't get over there. But Martinez obviously decided to have it
back home
in Argentina. I mean, fair play to him for that, because he could have easily used the excuse and not fought.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, he I was brought in as cannon fodder because it was 30th anniversary of Falklands War, wasn't it? Mm. So that's why I was
bringing an Englishman in.
Yeah, bringing an Englishman in. Yeah, why he gets done in. But that, like I said, I was brought in as cannon fodder for that. But
there was problems with the ring and all, wasn't there? And that
what happened was, you remember Gary Buckland?
Yeah,
remember him?
I used to spar Gary a lot.
I felt tight in him, you know. We was in the same hotel, so I seen him absolutely kill himself at make his weight, and then he made it, and then he was on the fight after me. But what happened was, when obviously Martinez won, the ring got absolutely bombarded and it collapsed. So then he couldn't fight. So he didn't end up fighting. But yeah, I mean that was some experience that for me. Like, it was. You know, nothing's ever come close to that. Hmm. I mean, again, I knew I needed to knock him out to win.
Did you feel like you were hated that night in the arena? Like, was it really hostile?
In the arena, yeah, but beforehand it wasn't. But obviously when everybody gets together and they've had a few drinks or whatever, and I think the old Falklands thing is pretty much like any of us. I think it's only politicians who's really bothered about it. Any of us aren't bothered, and they were the same when I went over there. They didn't hate me because it was an English bloke, you know what I mean? I got treated really well, but on the night it was proper hostile. Mm. Like, it was you're just in the zone, right? So you're not bothered, but it's quite intimidating for, you know, speaking with some of my supporters who went over, family and friends, and that was intimidating for them. But one of my mate, it's in my book list, my mate got robbed gunpoint. In an hotel got robbed, and he come down, he'd gone up to his room and come down mid-robbery. So obviously he was obviously gunned to his head and put on floor and what suck off him and all that carry on. But it was quite rough, but it was unreal experience. And the way he got treated over there, it was lovely, the lovely people, do you know what I mean? And Martinez did a nice thing for me, but he was a good fella, him. But like you said early on about the lawyer and his fight, with Sturman, The whole idea of him fighting me was after it fighting Cotto. Mm. Do you know what I mean? And had I won that fight, it just won't happen. So just politics of boxing, you know. It doesn't bother me. Is what it is.
Yeah,
there's no point getting net up over it, because where does it get you?
That's another one you won. And, you know, you should have been called the world champion again. Yeah. So that's two fights, and it just feels like it's a bit of a shame. It does for me. You're laughing. But, like, he won that fight. That was more convincing than the Sturm fight.
Yeah, yeah.
You put him over in the eighth round.
Yeah.
He wasn't badly hurt, but
it was just more of a square footed knockdown, that was it. He went over.
Yeah.
But the one him round 10, he was down heavy with that.
But they called it a slip, didn't they?
Yeah. Well, like, apparently as well, it was the first time like instant replay had been used in a. I don't know if it's been used since, but they used instant replay in that fight. So I think it was set up, no matter what. With all that instant replays, bit of a coincidence. I think no matter what, I'd if I'd have knocked him out, I think they'd have found some type of fault somewhere.
Right.
But they looked at this, it was a clear knockdown and they reeled it a slip, but
that's a pound for pound guy as well. Like everything, you never know what happens then after that. If you do get the decision, if he doesn't get up after the knockdown, like who are you talking about fighting Canelo and stuff then, you know? And
yeah, I know.
Huge names.
Yeah.
Well, even though he was a huge name, you fought big names, but it changes everything.
Yeah, definitely.
The one fighter that really everyone wanted to see Canelo fight in his prime was Gennady Golovkin. I think we saw him, it wasn't far on the slide, but certainly the last couple of years he's been a bit flatter than he has been. You certainly got him when he was at his best.
He
got you. I can remember Darren Barker said, you know, he said Tony Sims saved me when he said I got floated Golovkin. He said I didn't really think much of it. He said, yeah, all right, I'll take it. And Tony went, nah, we'll leave that one. He said, and I've always thanked him for it years later.
Yeah.
A fighter like that has got a reputation for kind of changing, can change lives.
Yeah.
And we saw what happened with Kell Brook, and there are numerous others. When the phone goes to fight somebody with that sort of reputation, does it feel any different for you, or is it just another fight?
Just a buzz. Just a buzz. I always wanted to get to ending my career, going back from impasse, just having no regrets, you know. I never dodged any fight, and it's worked against me. You know, you look back, it's worked against me, the fact, you know, they've got me on the cheap because they know I'd say yeah to the fight, you know what I mean? There was no really negotiations needed with the fight, but what happened was after Martinez, I was without promotion, so I literally went from fighting Sturm, and I didn't fight them for 6 months, and I fought in an 8-rounder. I should have been
I
should have been in a big fight. Instead, I was put in an 8-rounder in Manchester Velodrome on undercard of Scott Quigg and Rendell Monroe.
Yeah.
And then the same happened with Martinez, you know, so I fought Martinez, and then I ended up fighting then in December. I had a shocker. I fought that Sergey Kamitsky, who had fought once before. And I was full up flu when I fought him, but I needed to take the fight to honour me contract issues, you know, with Athens. So then obviously we parted with the Athens, and then I was kind of like, I was in limbo then. So that was when the deal came with Rodney Byrne from Golden Gloves in South Africa, which was a bit of a curveball, but it was kind of put forward to us, and it was like, a free fight deal. And at the end of it is Golovkin. So I knew for like 12 months beforehand, round about that I was going to be fighting Golovkin at some point. But it was set fights, a set dates, and something I could work towards. And it's the first time that I'd ever been given that type of structure in my boxing career. Do you know what I mean? So it was good for me, even though I knew I had a tough fight at the end of it.
Yeah.
I had some form of structure for me to build into the fight, which was, like I said, it was new for me, so it was good feeling.
Who's the last fighter you can remember before Golovkin that had that reputation? Mike Tyson?
I'm trying to think. Has there been anyone
Gerald
in between?
Gerald McClellan in the 90s had a pretty fierce reputation, didn't he? Not many, though.
Tony did have at one point as well,
certainly
didn't he?
Did, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, he certainly did. But he was right up there, wasn't he, at that particular point?
Just, you know, scary man, Golovkin, and serious puncher, serious fighter.
Do you remember the Gabriel Rosado fight?
Yeah.
He looked like he'd been just dipped in paint by the end of it, and that was only 7 rounds.
I know.
So all of that evidence, and everyone's obviously, you know, the media hype around it, and you feel like you're going in there with you know, the sort of lion in one of the...
It stops everyone up until you've... And you went the longest.
Yeah,
you
the 11, longest. Yeah. So Jacobs was the first one who did 12 within one.
Yeah.
And then obviously Canelo twice since then, but it was an hard fight, but it's what you're in the game for, isn't it? Do you know what I mean?
I remember you saying actually about his punching power, and obviously he's a serious puncher.
Yeah.
But you said to me that Groves singly punched harder.
Yeah, for one punch. I had a virus when I fought Groves, which I didn't feel that physically strong anyway. But that's not my excuse. But when I fought Golovkin, obviously, you know, you go out and fault his power because, you know, I'd made a big thing about people being beat before they got in the ring with him, do you know what I mean? So I really wanted to stand up to him and just, no matter what, just try my best and only go out if I got actually taken out rather than getting beat before I got in. So I went in and I felt his power at the beginning of the round, and I thought, all right, you've got a good thud here, but I thought, I can deal with this. But it's the culmination of every shot, you know
accurate
what I mean? Accuracy, his jab. You know, when I fought Groves for actually one punch, you know, I remember fighting Groves, and people say this to me, everybody think Groves have got a good jab, and he has. But Golovkin, for me, has had a better job. What I think Groves is good at is his feet. His feet are really wide. He's got a big, wide stance, and he's got pure power in his backhand. So I remember when I fought Groves, and this big right hand just whizzed past my head. Fucking, I'm glad I'm not into that. So I kind of, like I said, I didn't feel myself in it, but I just squirt around and try and get through the rounds. But the thing is with Groves, he's, you know, he did have some chinks in his armour, which he did deteriorate. And with Golovkin, if anything, just got stronger.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And when he dropped me in round four, from round four to eight, I was still recovering.
Yeah.
But I took some serious damage within that four rounds, you know what I mean? Because I thought nine, he had an okay round. 10, I was having a good, decent round up until he dropped me.
Mm.
And when I was fighting him, I thought, because like he'd stopped everybody, the only little weakness I got of him was I could kind of feel a little bit of desperation from him. The fact that he thought, okay, this might go 12. Do you know what I mean? But apart from that, everything with him was spot on. There was just no chinks in his armour whatsoever.
Wow.
But he's by far the best fighter I've been in with.
Mm. Did that fight take anything out of you, do you think?
I don't know. I mean, I've never... Obviously, my biggest fight since that was Groves. Obviously, me and Groves, like, you know, if you watch the first half of the fight, was crap, really, because, like I said, I was, like, just skirting about. But, like, from when I think end of round eight, he caught me with a backhand, yeah, and I didn't see any, just hit me, and I just my legs had gone. And then, I mean, it was just before Bell, anyway, I staggered into the corner. And then I sat on me stool, and Oliver was on about pulling me.
Mm.
And I couldn't really, I was still buzzing. And I was like, he was like, oh, I'm going to pull you. Him and Frank Hopkins were talking, I'm going to pull you. And I'm like, don't pull me, please, don't pull me. It's like me kind of, I'd hate that. I'd just rather go down fighting, no matter who it's against, I'd always do it.
Yeah.
But sometimes it's not the right thing to do. But anyway, I just said to him, I said, oh, listen, please, give me one more round. He was like, go out. He said, go out then and give me some. Show me for. So as I stood up, my feet just felt they were buzzing, like my feet were burning. Yeah, they're still not recovered. And fucking David Ayers in the corner right outside him, and he went, get on him, George, he's still buzzed. And I was thinking, fucking shut up. I felt actually buzzing, and I went out and I managed to catch him. And then it was just we had a good last four rounds, me and Groves.
Mm.
But it was a good fight. But that was my biggest fight since Golovkin. Abraham, I thought I won the fight, but yeah. I fucked up against Abraham. The thing is, like, Groves, Golovkin, Stern, Martinez, I left it all in the ring. I'm one of my only regrets with boxing is I didn't leave it all in the ring with Abraham. I left it too close, and you should never do that. I still thought I won the fight, but I shouldn't have done it. So, you know, I put my hands up and, you know, just... accept it, just is what it is, innit? Do you know what I mean?
Mm. I mean, I know there's two things that are ringing true here. Is the Warrington fight is one that you wouldn't have wanted Jamie to have pulled you out at any point because you wanted to see out the 12, and I've forgotten the second one, but it was important. And the other one was, I suppose you left it all in the ring, wasn't it? You gave absolutely everything until the 12.
I kept trying, and I think that's similar to what Martin's saying. I'd rather go out flat on the face than get pulled out. And I think there's a lot of fighters like that, but it's just something, and it's probably nothing to be ashamed of, but I'd be ashamed to get pulled out.
Oh yeah, I would.
Do you think
yeah.
Gallagher should have pulled Crawler out in between the rounds on Saturday?
No, I don't think so. I think that the fight was kind of only going one way, but I watched the fight the next morning and I wasn't thinking that in between the rounds. Did think it recently, Liam Smith against
Eggington.
I did think the corner should have pulled him out a round earlier, but not still early in the fight for Crawler and Loma. And no, I don't think Joe's the blame there, really.
You ask any fighter, though, what they should say is go out with my shield every time.
Yeah.
What they should say, do you know what I mean? So I don't think you'll ever get a fighter and trainer falling out over a fighter saying, you should have fucking pulled me then. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Listen, it is a dangerous sport, but from a fighter's point of view, that's how I think it should be.
How's Oliver these days? Because obviously he's been extremely unwell, and I know you had to kind of taper down your training sessions with him. How's he doing?
Yeah, he's okay. Yeah, yeah, he's doing good. He's a private man, Oliver. So, you know, I don't want to say too much because he doesn't like anybody knowing his business. It's just him. He's just old school. He's a private man. But he's doing okay.
Good to hear. Good to hear. Okay, lovely. You are listening to and watching Round 11 of TKO here on Joe together with 32 Red. Me, Chris Lloyd and Carl Frampton will be with you every Thursday. Now, though, here's Russell Kane with something else from Joe.
Thanks, Chris. I'm Russell Kane. Please subscribe to my podcast, Boys Don't Cry. It's fascinating. Much needed. It's not men in cardigans talking about their feelings, and it's not men talking about boobs and football. It's men being provoked into honestly talking about the things you wish they'd talk about, ladies. So lads, listen in for the awkwardness. Ladies, listen in with nosiness. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. And by the way, I'm not Nick Grimshaw.
Cheers, Russell. Welcome back to Round 11 of TKO here on Joe together with 32 Red. You were saying at the top of the show, you said you feel like you've got one more fight in you.
Yeah.
Or maybe more, I don't know. But is it that you feel mentally you're not ready to quit, or is it physically?
Definitely not physically. Definitely. I'm the best now in between fights than I've ever been. It's just mentally. Like I said earlier about the year he had last year, you know, but you think of everything you put in, you just hope you just get a little bit of reward, and it was just one of them with me. It was just like setback after setback after setback, and I was just pissed off with it. Hmm. Do you know what I mean? And like, since I turned pro end of 2007, so this is the first year, so from 2008, so this is what now, 11 years, yeah, 2019, this is the first year of an 11 years where I've started the year not smashing my body, not putting no expectations on myself, and just enjoying life. And I'm in a good place, you know what I mean? I look back and how much stress and pressure I put myself under, and I want to allow myself to enjoy it. Whereas now, I've had that mental break, I've recharged a little bit, and I know I'm not physically done. It was just mentally, it was just on my ass. Mm. Whereas obviously, it's just building back up now, and I'm getting a lot more positive about it, you see. So that's why, I mean... there's definitely one more big fight in me, definitely, without a shadow of a doubt. I know there is. So I'm looking at getting out in summer and putting my name back out there, and hopefully can land a big fight. But like I said, I've never had much luck in boxing, so I'm not expecting much, but I'm doing it because I want to enjoy it. And you know,
I seen an interview you've done with Boxing News, and I read it and I loved it. The headline even was brilliant. There was something like, I don't give a fuck what anyone else thinks. I'm boxing because I want to box.
Yeah, and that's it. And it's the first time that I've actually done it. Mm. Do you know what I mean? It's the first time that I've actually done it, because you're on about, what about people saying, I'm not asked about anybody.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? I'm asked about me. That's it. I know there's a big fight out there for me, definitely. So it's just about me, just, like I said, just enjoying these next couple of months off, getting back at gym, putting my name back out there, and hopefully something comes up. But again, like I said earlier, if it comes up, great. If it doesn't, great. You know what I mean?
Mm.
But there is definitely one big fight out there for me. I'm just gonna enjoy it till it comes along.
Yeah, be nice to get you two finishing careers on wins, wouldn't it? Really?
Yeah, and I think that Martin's probably in the same boat as me. I think we're both better than our last performances, and we've had great careers. It wouldn't be nice to go out on a performance like that. I would love to go out on a win. I'm sure Martin's the same.
Yeah, absolutely spot on there, what you said then as well.
I genuinely still think I could be a world champion. Yeah. And people may say you're deluded, but I'm going to take a leaf out of Martin's book and fuck them. I don't really care.
Yeah. Listen, Frank Bruno won it the fifth time of asking, didn't he? So it's not impossible.
That's
and even,
it.
As you say, even if it doesn't happen, you've had a great career.
That's and, it. Exactly. Lost. You know, I look back from, you know, 2006 was the last time I was in jail. No one ever had thought I'd have been here. Do you know what I mean? And it was even starting out, you know, I didn't put any expectation. I would have said, like I expected, it was only as time went on, I just wanted to train and take every fight and see where I got to. And as time's gone on, obviously, when I come so close against Sturm, that's when I really thought I was just chasing the world title bad.
The Martinez one,
you know
was
what I mean? The Martinez. And it was just like that. It just seemed one little thing after another. A problem I feel I've always had is when I decided to turn my life around, I just wanted to get my head down and work hard. And that's what I've did. And I think sometimes I've just worked a little bit too hard. I've overtrained. But it's done me no harm. Like I said, I was big into the party scene, took a lot of drugs. I'm ashamed to say it. But over the years, I've partied a lot. Never since I went back amateur in 2006, never. But, within all that time, I've been away 4 times. And I look where I am now, what I've got with my wife and my kids. And, I've done well. So, things could have been better, but things could have been far worse. And, I'm happy in a good place. I feel lucky in the fact that I just want everybody to do well. I don't hate on anybody. If somebody does well, good on them. And I just want people to do well, you know what I mean? So I feel blessed that I'm in that position, and it's just helped me in my own life. I feel lucky and blessed, you know what I mean?
Good man. Well, lovely to speak to you, mate. Thank you so much.
Enjoy.
Before we go, though, 30-second challenge. I'm going to read you out a list of words. A lot of them you'll recognise, and I want you to say the first thing that comes into your head.
Right.
Ready for this?
Let's go.
All right, this is our 32-second challenge with 32 Red. Okay. Chizzy.
Oh, God. Absolute legend.
Clubbing.
Good times.
Robin Park Arena in Wigan.
Debut.
Cyprus.
Good and bad times.
Prize fighter.
My first bit of proper exposure.
Prison.
Experience.
Martinez.
Great fighter.
Gemma.
One of a kind.
World title.
It's been and gone.
Golovkin.
Animal.
Oliver Harrison.
Legend.
And the future.
Positive.
Good man. Martin Murray, what a pleasure. Thank you very much.
Pleasure, man. Thank you.
Thank you, Martin.
Cheers. Thank you very much. Cheers, Carl, cheers as always. Martin, thank you very much. Thank you at home for watching as well. TKO round 11 done and dusted. Remember to check out a couple of our other episodes as well. Joshua Boazzi last week, David Hay the week before, and our other shows, Russell Kane, Boys Don't Cry, and House of Rugby with Alex Payne and James Haskell too. This has been TKO on Joe. Thanks for watching. We'll see you again next week.
You've been listening to TKO on Joe, together with 32 Red.